Well, you lived at Stonecross Farm, didn't you?
Yes, well, you see, when Stonecross Farm got... Well, before Stonecross Farm was built, the house there got struck by lightning. And while Stonecross Farm was being built, we went to live down at Grandad's with Grandad Chapman and his wife. And we had several rooms there. It was such a big house. There was plenty of room for both of us, both families. And oh, it was a lovely old house. I'm always sorry that that went out of the family, only it was sold during that very bad period we had, would be 1947, was it? When the floods were. Yeah. And I know all the family, all my family, were all occupied with the work on the banks, the floods. And this sale happened to be one night when they were so desperate about the floods, they just couldn't get away to go to the sale. And it was sold for just a few £100, and Handley's bought it. We always felt sorry that it didn't keep in the family, because it was such a lovely old building. And the garden and the yard, down the yard there was an old-fashioned lavatory with three seats in it. And it was a pit underneath, you know, it was one of the old-fashioned pits underneath. But the whole family could go to the toilet together, you see, 'cause there were three seats.
Yeah.
But it was a nice old house, and buildings too, and the yard. There aren't any places about like those now.
When you were young, did you used to cook with your mother and do the cooking?
Yes, we had down at Grandad Chapman's, I think there was a Dutch oven. Well, a Dutch oven is an oven in the wall, and you put the fire underneath the bottom like you would under an old stick copper. You could burn sticks and wood and get it nicely heated, and they were very good for bread making. We used to make our bread, lovely bread, in the Dutch oven, and then we did the boiling and the cooking on the low hearth, burning sticks. We never had an electric cooker, it wasn't such a thing, and we didn't have an oil stove even. We did all our cooking like that. So we only had a baked dinner, perhaps Sundays, and one day during the week.
Did you go out to work at all?
Me? Yeah. Oh no, I had to help at home. I used to go and help sometimes pick up potatoes. I hated that job.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You see, there was plenty to do at home, because we had a pig kill twice a year, and there was all that to do, and we had a dairy. I made butter, used to make the butter. We used to churn and separate the milk night and morning, and there was all the dairy things to wash up and clean.
Would you sell the butter or keep
it? Oh yes, we sold the butter. Oh yes, we made about £60 a week. And used to have people come to the door with the jugs for the milk. And there was all the milk pails to wash up. And
so there wasn't a milkman then?
Oh no, milkman. Nobody went round with the milk. People came to the door for it. And they came to the door for the butter as well.
You were like a store then, weren't you, in a way?
In a way, yes. And eggs, you see, we would sell eggs too. This is about my brother Arthur. Now, on the whole, I had a very happy childhood. I think this was largely due to the fact that I had a happy home life. My parents never made any show of their deep affection for each other, but I remember whenever my father came into the house, his first words, if he could not see her, were, "Where's your mother?" She was behind him in all that he did, helping all that she could. Meals always ready, money matters always carefully attended to. She was the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Although my father always did the buying and selling and planning of the farm, my elder brother Arthur did his share early in life and taking a pride in the work, being especially good with animals. I often thought what a fine veterinary surgeon he would have made. He had a way with animals, and it was largely due to his loving care and attention that a lovely young horse recovered from a badly injured foot. He watched by that horse with devotion, bathing and dressing a nasty wound, not a very pleasant or easy task. This brother always seemed grown up to me. He had two special friends, Fred Holmes and Bob Solomon. They all three attended the Wesleyan Chapel. When they were in their teens, it became the fashion to have a walking stick. And I remember my brother and Fred bought one each. They cost sixpence and were proudly used. I can see them in my imagination now, walking up the village street, stepping out briskly and swinging these sticks. They took them everywhere on their walks, and your granny's got that stick now.
Has she?
Yes. I expect they set the fashion among the youths of the village. My brother often spent his evenings cleaning and polishing the horse brasses. To see them shine and sparkling was his pride and joy. Sometimes he went tooting. He owned a tooting net, which he shared with other lads, going around the hedges, armed with sticks. As soon as darkness fell, the plan was for one to hold the net in such a way as to catch as many sparrows and sometimes a blackbird as possible. I expect we would now call this cruel sport, but in those far-off days, it was a pleasant pastime. And anyway, nowadays there are no hedges, and the young folk find more exciting and interesting things to do. A highlight of the year for my brother and his friends was a day in London. The first time they went on this trip, they didn't think much to the London transport. In our village in those days, the local bus would stop anywhere to pick up a passenger who held up his hand. However, in London, this method did not work. No matter if all three of these country boys waved their hands aloft and shouted, no bus would stop. Finally, the London policeman helped them out with instructions about their travels. What changes since those days? Now very young girls and boys travel abroad on their own with every confidence. One of the greatest trials of my childhood was my young brother George. He was a small, pale-faced little boy with black eyes. He was always on the lookout for mischief, and to this day he bears the scars of some of his escapades. He was forever tormenting me. Calling me names was a favourite form of torture. In spite of all this, I felt responsible for him and was always dreading that something dreadful would happen to him and that he would come to an untimely end unless I had him constantly in sight, and this annoyed him. He didn't want his sister always hanging around. His playmates were far more friendly towards me. George Palmer, Whiff Markwell and Fred Hitch treated me with far more respect. Having a small pale face and being able to look so innocent and angelic was a great advantage for my brother. One could never suspect him of taking live mice to school. He looked too timid for such a crime. He wasn't very fond of school, and quite often he could even deceive my mother by putting on that pathetic expression and holding his stomach and looking sick. He got away with it and was able to get many mornings away from school. It became noticeable how quickly he recovered when the school bell ceased to ring and it turned 9 o'clock. His appetite returned and he took an interest in all around. In time, this was his downfall, and my mother became heartless to his aches and pains, and he was ordered off to school in no uncertain manner. We all loved the days when the threshing tackle came to our yard. How we ran home from school on those days, and all other children became friendly and trooped home with us. There was such fun to be had in our yard. The puffing steam engine with Peggy at the wheel, my father giving orders, so many jobs to be done, 3 men sent to the corn stack and 3 on the straw stack, another feeding the drum, another minding the chaff, and 1 or 2 strong men carrying those big sacks of corn into the barn for storage. One job my father gave us children. Some thought it was great fun, but I was a skinny child and not very strong, and I didn't care very much for this job. It was chaff treading. We had a chaff house, and it was our job to pack into it as much chaff as possible. Round and round we stamped, falling over and rolling about in the chaff. We got chaff in our hair, down our necks, and even in our mouths. Another job we were expected to do was to keep the tub of water which fed that steam engine full. Up and down we worked the pump handle. It wasn't hard work, but it was monotonous. I remember my brother sat on the edge of that tub of water, dangling his legs on its sides. He had been cautioned about the danger of falling backwards, but as usual, he never heeded caution, and back he fell with such a splash. He was soon pulled out, spluttering and gasping and soaking wet. Children have queer likes and dislikes. What we liked best of all was to be armed with long sticks, spits they were called, to kill the rats and mice, which were usually to be found at the bottom of any stack. We waved our sticks about, shouted and screamed. Many a time we got late for school because we stayed too long in the dinner hour, taking part in this enjoyable sport. When the thrashing was done during the school holidays, we had the extra pleasure in joining the men for docky. We had a big kitchen, and my mother always had the docky ready in good time, with plates of ham or fat pork and pickles and hunks of bread and butter, finishing with a large slice of cake or jam tart, all washed down with large cups of cocoa. Some of the men preferred to have their docky in the barn, and I would take jugs of cocoa to them. The chief topic of conversation was how the corn was turning out, how many coombs per acre compared with Normans, Ruins, Hilro Fen, and other parts of the neighbourhood. Peggy was the last to come in for his docky, and the first to go back to work, stoking up his engine and getting steam up again. It was all hard and dirty work, but they were tough, hard-working men. I tell you, when we had the army here, Jane Addams's club room, she kept the Vine public house. Her club room was used by the military. And she was a proper character. I've got a story about her somewhere. but on one occasion an officer asked her for a key for the room where they'd kept their goods, army goods. Jane refused to hand it over. She said, "Who do you think you are wanting my key?" He replied, "I'm Colonel so-and-so." Jane said, "I don't care if you're a blinking corporal." All ranks meant the same to her, and she had no respect to persons. I thought that would come in with
the war stuff.
The
yes.
war bit. Mm. Peeping through the curtains to see the village bandsmen clustered round a lighted lamp tied to a pole, and hearing "Hark the Herald" and "O Come All Ye Faithful" played with great gusto, and joining with other young people as soon as darkness fell to tour the village to sing these same well-known Christmas hymns, are two of my earliest Christmas recollections. Deep snow and sparkling frost added to these pleasures. Why did we never feel the cold in those days? There were no luxuries in those bygone days. Homemade paper chains and holly decorated our rooms, and a pile of logs filled our hearth. Homemade cakes and puddings and mincemeat filled the pantry shelves. A box of dates, a dish of nuts, oranges and apples, and a bottle of ginger wine were included in our Christmas fare. Christmas Eve was always a busy time for my mother, stuffing the goose, preparing the vegetables, and getting the children off to bed early. This was no trouble on Christmas Eve, the night when Father Christmas came. I can remember trying to keep awake, wanting to see him arrive, at the same time being somewhat fearful of some stranger filling that long stocking of my father's, which hung at the foot of my bed. I can still recall the rustling sound that stocking made when I woke early next morning and pushed my feet down the bed towards its bulging sides. An orange in the toe, a few nuts and sweets, handkerchiefs, just a few simple things were all it contained, and yet what a joy and thrill they gave me. For several years, my younger brother and I had our Christmas Day tea with some elderly relatives who lived 2 miles away in Hillrow. I wish I could make a ground rice cake like the one we always had for tea. No rich iced Christmas cake could compare with that rice cake, with sugary, buttery, mouth-watering taste. And how I would have liked a second slice. After tea, we played dominoes and draughts and a game of I Spy, and then hot mince pies and a cup of cocoa, and muffled up with scarves and coats, we walked home. I can well remember those walks over 50 years ago. It was always moonlight and frosty, and how the frost did sparkle, and the stars. I watched the stars, they were so bright, and a shooting star gave me a shiver down my spine. It seemed such a fearful and frightening thing. I never see a shooting star now without being reminded of those walks home on Christmas nights. Looking back on those bygone Christmases, why did I enjoy a walk in the frost and snow then, and now I hate to even step out of the door or leave the fireside for a short while? Does the cold get colder as one gets older, or do our likes and dislikes change, and we prefer the warmth of the inside of our house to the biting cold outside? We roasted chestnuts and almost roasted ourselves by our open grates. Then, hugging a hot brick wrapped in flannel, we went to bed, contented with simple pleasures, finding time to think of the real message of Christmas of peace on earth, goodwill to all men. At the Methodist Sunday School at Christmas time, we were always given collecting cards for overseas missions. And during the holiday period, I went around collecting from various people, mostly a penny or tuppence. To get sixpence was a great help. I had an old aunt in the next village of Wilburton, who always gave me tuppence for the missions. But as I was scared of the Wilburton children, I put off this collection until finally I plucked up courage, got the tuppence, and then ran until I was well on the way home. During the Christmas holidays, we usually had the Sunday school treat, a real highlight and red letter day. I can remember one year, after the usual tea of bread and butter and fruit and plain cake, we had a magic lantern. It was a show given by an old gentleman with a smoky oil lantern and glass slides, which he kept showing upside down. And I can remember how the rows of children cheered when the old man did manage to get a picture the right way up the first time.
April showers make way for sweet May flowers, and then comes June, our moon and you. March winds and April showers, romance will soon be ours, an outdoor paradise for two. With your lips to mine, in a thrill divine, I'll be so inspired that I'll get you the moon for a toy balloon. March winds and April showers make way for happy hours and May time, June time, love time and you.
Upside down.
for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you. Find it out, don't take away my dream from me. Never thought I'd see an angel, but seeing is believing. You got me believing in